Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Coming up over the next hour, from booking flights to paying your bills, interacting online is set to become a whole lot easier with the arrival of the European Accessibility Act. We'll hear the detail. Refurbed will join me to explain the trends in the world of the technology circular economy. And while you may not have noticed it just yet, this is an AI cloned voice. And later in the show, we'll explore why you need to question everything that you hear. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find Jess on Instagram at JessKellyNT.
Okay, that's enough from the AI clone. This is the actual Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As the clone says, we're going to talk about the issue of AI cloning, deep fakes, trusting what you're hearing later in the show. I was talking to Anton Savage about this on The Hard Shoulder on Wednesday and was kind of blown away by the reaction. A lot of people thought that AI me was actually me and that AI Anton was actually Anton. Some people were freaked out about it, with good cause. And yeah, we have some AI voices bringing you a report on that later in the show. But as always, I'd love to hear from you. As the clone said, you can email techtalk@newstalk.com. But I want to start this week's show with Refurbed. We often get questions on this show, and indeed to the Pat Kenny Show, looking for recommendations of phones. People who want a decent phone but without breaking the bank. And I'm always recommending Refurbed, Swappy and Mint Plus. They are three excellent refurbished retailers. And I'm delighted to say that Padraig Power of Refurbed.ie is with me now. Padraig, as I mentioned there, a lot of people are interested in getting their hands on a refurbished phone. Are you seeing the trends coming through that people are turning to services like yourself when it comes to their next purchase? Or is it just that they get the advice and then don't follow through?
Yes, absolutely. So we're continuously seeing growth every single year with Refurbed, particularly in Ireland. And we're very much seeing it as well when it comes to the smartphones. I think at the start when we came to the country, people didn't really know what refurbished was. People were like, okay, this is something that's new to us, but it's cheaper, I'll give it a go. But over the years, the education really has expanded and people know what refurbed is, knows what refurbished is, and what it means. And they're really, really turning to this more sustainable and cheaper alternative.
One thing that I was struck by, and it has changed over the last little while in terms of the tone of the texts and the emails that come in, but I think trust levels with refurbished retailers or secondhand retailers wasn't really there up until recently enough, because I think people might have had bad experiences of buying from unofficial, unauthorized resellers rather than refurbished outlets. Can you just explain for those who might not know the key difference between an operation such as yourselves versus buying something on Facebook Marketplace or an online retailer or some of the shops that people might walk by on a high street?
Yeah, of course. Of course, it's a great question. So when it comes to the marketplaces, like Facebook Marketplace, like you mentioned, a lot of those are just somebody who's at home themselves and has a device that they no longer want and they're selling it on. So it's not actually going through any quality testing. You have no guarantee with the product. Once you get it, you don't know and you really are taking a risk. Then you have some other sellers, like online sellers, like you mentioned, which are official stores, but they might just be selling used products. So again, it's not necessarily going through the quality standards and testing. But then the third area would be refurbished devices, which is what Refurbed sells. And with us, all of our products actually go to an expert certified refurbisher, go through a full refurbishment process. So every section, every aspect of the device is tested, made sure that it works exactly as new. If it doesn't work as new, it's going to be fixed up or replaced with original parts. And then once tested again, and once everything is good there, and once the certified refurbisher is happy with the quality, then it can be sold via Refurbed, and the customer gets a minimum 1-year warranty, also a free trial with the product as well. So really, it's a different category where consumers know that they're covered as opposed to taking a risk on a kind of just previously used device.
I know that Refurbed is sort of a bigger operation than just here in Ireland. Can you just tell me a little bit about that? And if products that you resell are from Ireland, or where do the products that are refurbished to that standard, where are they sourced from?
Yeah, of course. So with Refurbed, we're actively selling in 12 countries across Europe right now, and the headquarters of Refurbed itself is in Austria. But when it comes to all of our products that we sell in Refurbed, everything is EU sourced. So all of our, we have different sellers, I should explain, who specialize in certain products, because with us we have tens of thousands of different products. So we really want to make sure that we have very specialized refurbishers for each device. And with that, all of our refurbishers are based around Europe. All of our products are gotten within Europe. So while they mightn't specifically be coming from Ireland, it will be coming to you from Europe. And on the flip side, we have some special Irish refurbishers and certified sellers who actually then get to sell their products to other European countries as well. So we're really trying to make it a European-wide circular economy.
And you mentioned there that the offering has expanded. Like, I'm on the website here at the moment, and it really has broadened out from just the phones. Obviously, there's, you know, smartwatches, tablets, laptops, but then we've got kitchen appliances, games consoles, you know, robot vacuum cleaners, printers. What was, I suppose, what was the business case for expanding the offering? Because I'm sure the business could have just kept on going doing the phones. Why, and what opportunity was identified to expand that range?
So from the very start, actually, it was always the plan to expand. When it came to Refurbed and what we wanted to offer, we want to be a full marketplace, and not just for electronics, but even beyond that. So we want to make sure that we're a circular economy space where anybody who needs something in their day-to-day life, they can go and they can kind of purchase it, or they know that there's a good chance they'll find it on Refurbed. And that was our goal from the very start, to make sure that we're that go-to space for people within Europe. But when it came to launching first with smartphones, the reasoning behind that is, number one, they were one of the most accessible product types within Europe for refurbishment at the time. And number two, they're also something that everybody uses. Every single person has a smartphone, whereas maybe not everybody has a KitchenAid. So really, we wanted to launch with a product that could reach as many people as possible, get the trust there with people that they know, okay, wow, these really are fantastic quality, and then say, hey, we actually have even more products that you can do use, or you can kind of look for when it comes to trying to purchase more sustainably for your home or your day-to-day life. So it was a plan from the start, and we're really happy to finally be getting there and bringing all of these different categories to people across Ireland.
Do you have a typical refurbed customer? Is it younger people who are looking to save a few quid? Is it people who are doing it from an environmental point of view? Is there such a thing as a standard refurbed customer?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The yes and no would be the answer. So I think, not I think, but I know from our research, for the most part, most people coming to Refurbed are people who want to bargain and are people who are cost conscious, particularly with the current cost of living crisis that's going on. And then secondary, we see is the sustainability factor, where people are like, oh, that's a great added benefit. I'm also helping the environment. When it comes to age demographics, it's actually not necessarily younger people. A lot of people would think that that might be the case, but we see a lot of adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s plus even coming to Refurbed, whether that be for themselves, or a lot of the time they might be buying for their children or for younger people in their family. So the age demographics, gender demographics very much split, but usually it is somebody who wants to save a bit, get a good bargain for their buck, and also likes the added benefit of sustainability.
One thing that I've picked up in chatting with the heads of some of the mobile phone manufacturers over the last number of years is that they're conscious phones are lasting longer. People aren't upgrading as frequently. And also, a lot of people balk at the notion of paying 1200 quid for a phone. Are you seeing that trend as well? Are you seeing people coming and maybe buying an iPhone 14 from you rather than going down the brand new iPhone 16? Like, is the premium offering reflected still in the refurbished space?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of our most popular products right now when it comes to phones actually is the iPhone 14 range. And we also see people buying the 15 and 16 from us, which is really heartening to see. I suppose for consumers, they are getting that bit cheaper than new, but at the same time, a 15 or 16 is, a relatively new device. So the fact that they are still coming to refurbished and trying to get that and then have it for the next number of years is really nice for us. We do see people then on the flip side coming first from older models, which is nice because they're being supported more. So for the iOS, for example, for iPhones, the iPhone 11, it was released in 2019, that's still covered by current iOS, and it's planned for to be covered at least for this year and into next year, with regards to Apple software. So I think the software cover is really helping people on both ends of the spectrum, the ones who want to get that cheaper, older device, but know that they can still use it. And the ones who are like, hey, I just want to get something that's new, good quality, but save a bit of money there because the €1,200 price tag, like you mentioned, is just extortionate.
And in terms of customer service and customer support, so you mentioned there that you guys, there's a warranty when a customer buys something from you. But if something isn't working right, or say if there's a key loose on a keyboard or whatever it might be, is the customer service and support there? Because I do think that's something that people are still apprehensive about, regardless of whether it's a brand new product, a refurbished product, a secondhand product, or whatever.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. And I myself, as a consumer, would also be the same and have the same questions. When it comes to refurbed, one thing that we have, which is quite unique and I think a nice benefit to have versus new, is that you do have a 30-day free trial. So you can get your device. And once you have it, if you want to return it for any reason, whether it's performance related or you just don't like the device, you can return that within the 30-day window with no questions. And then outside of that, we have your minimum 12-month warranty. So everything that you mentioned there, if there was any functionality issues with the product, or not that there should be, but if there were, you are covered, you have your 12-month warranty. And we do have an extended warranty option as well. And we see the extended warranty option is used more so for people when they're looking for these more premium devices. So if someone was coming for, let's say, a 15, as you mentioned, or a 14, they might say, hey, look, I know I want this for the next 5 years, I want this for a longer period. I would rather have a longer warranty just to be covered. So we have that option on our website as well to make sure people have every security that they feel they'll need for their product.
And we spoke there about the broadening of the offering, and I'm still on the website here now, and I see there's golf clubs and golf bags and loads of different things. What's the longer term plan here? So you said that you want to be, a key part of the circular economy. Would there ever be such a thing as a refurb pop-up shop so people can come in and see the products? Is that not practical? Is it just expanding the list of products that you have the entire time?
Yeah, that's really interesting. A pop-up shop would definitely be a very cool thing to do. When it comes to having something like that and refurbs operations, if we ever were fortunate enough to do it, it would more so just be to kind of look at products in real life. We wouldn't sell in person. And the reason for that is because we right now, I think we have 30,000 products or more, different types of products on the website. So really, if you came into a store, you just wouldn't get the offering that you're getting online. So in future, yes, we might have something like that to showcase the quality standard in person. But that aside, it really is expanding. And I think you can see from our website, and if any listeners are interested in checking out our website, Refurbed, you can see all of the different categories kind of are linked to tech and electronics right now. But now we're finally at a point where we're expanding out of that as well. So when it comes to the sports, like you mentioned, we have golf balls, we have skis, we have snowboards. So it's really starting to bring those other areas in and not just be electronic focused. And that's where our kind of plans are right now, are to try and continue and see how much more sustainable and refurbished categories and products are available that we can bring to Irish consumers.
Another area that I know people are curious about, because we often get the text into the Pat Kenny show, is what do I do with my old phone, tablet, whatever it may be? Do you guys take products in from consumers, or are you not at that stage, and is that not an area that you'd be into?
So it's an area we're very into. We actually launched last year our trade-in offer, which essentially selling your phone to refurb. So we do have that now. It's in the Irish market. It's in a number of markets across Europe. But basically, like you would with, you know, selling your phone to a local shop, you can actually sell your phone to refurb now. So we have a full section on our website. You can evaluate your phone before you send it in, and then you send it to us, and you can get cash for your phone, so directly into your bank account. So that's something that we love as an offer, because for us, particularly for people who want to, you know, kind of renew their phones more frequently, or people who have old phones lying around, they can now sell them and make the cash. We can then refurbish the product and put it back in the market. Or if the product itself isn't refurbishable, maybe there's parts of it that might be useful for something, or at least to be disposed of in a more ethical and environmentally friendly manner. So that's something we launched last year. It's going really well. We hope in the future to bring this to other categories, like you mentioned, iPads and other areas. That's not something that we're doing currently, but it's definitely a possibility. And right now it's the phones, but I think it's great to do that, because it really closes the full loop. Someone can buy something sustainable, and even if they buy a refurbished phone from us, they could actually sell that phone back to us when they want to get an upgrade or do whatever kind of suits them next.
Mm. Actually, my final question, that you mentioned there, if something isn't refurbishable, you know, you guys can ensure that it is either taken apart for parts, or it's disposed of in an environmentally friendly way. Is the notion of something being unsalvageable kind of disappearing now with the quality of the build of the smartphones, the materials used, that, you know, the right to repair that's come in? Are we going to see fewer products ending up in landfill because of these changes that have been made?
I really hope so. I think it's something, you know, you can't guarantee. But as you mentioned, we have the right to repair. We do have the more robust models and hardware that's being released in the more recent years. And we are seeing positive steps towards that. I do think that if it isn't the case and something unfortunately isn't refurbishable, or something, you know, doesn't really hit that standard, at least we do have some great companies like We Ireland, where now you can, you know, dispose of your electronics for free with them, and they will make sure it's done in an ethical manner. I know they had a statistic last year where they actually saw a 100% increase when it came to small electronics being recycled, particularly those with lithium batteries, which is such a win for the environment, because these types of areas, such as lithium batteries or different metals, different aspects of phones that are being just disposed of in a non-environmentally conscious way, is really bad for our planet. It's non-renewable, it leaks in a lot of toxins. So hopefully we get to the point that you mentioned where everything is either refurbishable or it doesn't even need to be refurbished, it can just live on. But until we get to that point, I think it's important that kind of companies like We Ireland are supported, and that we also keep an eye out with the government to make sure that they try and facilitate where they can when it comes to the responsible disposal of electronics.
Padraig Cryer of Refurb.ie, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks very much, Jess. Absolute pleasure.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Yeah, that is the theme tune from Breaking Bad. And I'm playing that because last week on the show, I mentioned I'm heading off on my holidays, and I was on the hunt for TV show, movie and book recommendations. And I'm delighted to say that so many of you got onto me. So thank you very much for that. But Hillary sent a fantastic list of box sets, which included Breaking Bad. Other ones on the list that I haven't seen: The Americans, The Killing. She says the Danish version is better. The Bridge and 6 Feet Under. That is a fantastic list. I'm going to make my way through them. The other one that came in was Brian said The Gangs of London. A lot of Irish actors turn up in that. I haven't seen that at all. So I will add that to the list as well. Dave has been in touch and says some very nice things about the show. Thank you very much. He says, I've been living and working in Asia and Australia since around 1999. So I just hear you when I'm back in Dublin visiting the mother. Hello to Dave's mother. Hope you're well. He has two recommendations for me. So the first is the best series he's ever seen is called Mr. In Between. Fantastic. I'll have to give that a go. And then there's another book called Glamorama, which I just like saying anyway, Glamorama. So I will add that to the Kindle. Absolutely. It's written by Brett Easton Ellis. I'm just reading here now. It's a political thriller. Well, do you know, talking of political books, actually, I've been reading, or no, I haven't. I've been listening to the audiobook of The Original Sin, which is about Joe Biden and him deciding to run for re-election. And I guess the what was known, what was speculated, and what was denied in relation to his health and well-being as the election approached. It's infuriating to listen to be completely honest with you. It's very well researched, and I think the authors, Jake Tapper, and Alex Thompson, I think they said they spoke to over 200 people from like aides, opposition, politicians, and they're just sharing what they saw and observed. And it's, yeah, it's an infuriating listen, I have to say. Now, obviously, on a human level, you do feel for Joe Biden and you wish him well with his various health challenges and so on. But it really does lead or pose a whole host of questions about the Democratic Party. And how we've ended up where we are. But please do keep your suggestions coming for things to read and watch over the next little while. I am not going to be on the email as much over the next 2 weeks, but I will keep an eye on it. So please do send any of the recommendations that you have in to techtalk@newstalk.com. We're now going to move on to something entirely different, and that relates to accessibility online. This is something that has been in the news over the last little while because the European Accessibility Act just came into force over the last few days. And from booking flights to buying an ebook, digital access is a huge part of all of our lives. This coming into force across the EU sets a new legal standard for making digital products and services much more accessible. To explain what it means in practical terms, I'm joined by Jo Joyce from Taylor Wessing Ireland. Jo, it's great to have you on the show. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about this in the last few days. So for those who don't know anything about it, start at the very beginning. What is it and why is it needed?
Sure. So the European Accessibility Act is in fact a directive of the European Union, which is really important because it's not a regulation like the GDPR. And that'll be really important down the line because it means that each of the European Union's member states have to actually do things, pass their own legislation to bring it into force. Some of which were quite quick off the mark, others, like us in Ireland, a bit slower, and a few still have some work to do. So a lack of clarity around actually what's going on with the law and enforcement in some parts of the EU is still an ongoing issue. But the directive was introduced really as part of the EU's overall kind of digital programme with a particular focus on consumers and making sure that individuals, wherever they are in the European Union, get the same access to goods and services and the kind of the more exciting digital life that we can all lead in the modern world. There's a feeling that individuals with disabilities in the broader sense, so that those might be permanent disabilities, temporary disabilities, age-related conditions, even pregnancy-related conditions, those sorts of individuals might not be able to access markets for goods and services as consumers that that everybody else can. And that was both a terrible shame for them and also a bad thing for the EU market generally, because a healthy market means that everyone can get access and buy the things they want, enjoy the services that they like, and fully participate in the life of society.
Mm. And this is something that we've touched upon in the past on the programme with Vision Ireland, for example, and the accessibility of websites. But can you just paint, I suppose, a broader picture of what digital inaccessibility looks like, particularly in 2025 when, you know, service providers, retailers, everybody is pushing us to do our business online?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. Some years ago, we would think about accessibility as, does your shop have a ramp? Can people actually, get physically into your building to buy the goods they want? But now we all live our lives so much online, and the ability to live our lives online is a really important thing for many people with disabilities. It gives them access to communities, services, jobs that they wouldn't have had even a few years ago. But that only really works to its fullest if people can actually access those services, and particularly when there's a world of technology out there to help people. You mentioned, visually impaired people, but people with all sorts of disabilities to access digital services. But if actually websites and apps aren't having to act to make themselves compatible with those brilliant tech innovations, then they may as well not exist for a lot of people. We know that in the last census, 1.1 million people, I think, in Ireland said that they had a long-term impairment or disability of some sort. That's like 22% of our population. So this isn't a trivial number of people. It's a huge number of people for whom, in some cases, significant, but in many cases, fairly kind of moderate changes can help them to access services. And that might mean that, okay, your website, you actually have to look at it and make sure that the text contrast is right, that the types of fonts that you're using, the way you're using images, the way you're setting things out, are compatible with screen reader technology, which is literally just bits of tech that will read out a website for you and help you navigate it if you're either fully blind or just visually impaired. There's also, expectations around if you have video content, are there subtitles available, or is there a signing option for some individuals? And there's also an expectation that maybe if you need help using a website, if there's a help function, you ought to be able to speak to a person or potentially speak to an automated bot, but not have to type if actually typing is a challenge for you. So there are lots of different ways in which, particularly consumer sites and apps, can be made more accessible. Some of them require a reasonable amount of work, and others are actually quite small changes that can make a huge impact for people.
Yeah, an issue that has come up, somebody emailed me about it about 6 months ago, is that they have a slight visual impairment and they struggle with tech retailer websites. When you log on to the website, instantly you're met with a box that prompts you to put in your email address and get a discount. Then the cookies notification pops up, and there's an awful lot of things that, as somebody with full vision, I can easily swipe away, get rid of, and move on. But for somebody else, can be a massive barrier. And that person in the email ended up having to go to another retailer because they physically couldn't navigate their way through the site.
Yeah, and that's a really recurring issue. It's interesting you mentioned cookie boxes because, in my work, I see a lot of questions and queries around cookies and boxes and pop-ups, and they're a real challenge because there are lots of things that you have to do to meet lots of different types of legal requirements as an online retailer. You have to have your privacy notice. You have to tell people about cookies, but that doesn't mean that you can sort of lazily shove a thing in the middle of the screen and say, if you don't click through this, you can't access anything. You can't see what's going on. We're going to make our buttons difficult to decipher by just color coding them rather than having clear text. There are all sorts of things that I'm afraid require just a bit more thought to make them accessible for everyone.
And so now, is there an obligation on businesses to address this themselves, or what way does stuff like this come into play and come into practicality?
Yeah, so the European Accessibility Act, which has been introduced into national law by the Irish government last year, is going to require businesses to really go through a whole bunch of steps to make sure that they're compliant and making their services as accessible as possible. Now, this doesn't apply to absolutely everything. For our purposes, it's going to be consumer websites and apps, so anywhere, where you can make a purchase as a consumer. It also really importantly applies to e-banking, and obviously having access to your banking is really important for everyone. And in a world where we're all doing our banking online, particularly in Ireland, where we're really kind of ahead of the game compared to some countries, it's extra important that actually that's accessible for everyone. And there are a few other things as well, like e-books and e-reader technology have to be compatible with the new legislation, as do smartphones, computers, smart TVs, ATM machines. It's not absolutely everything, but it's if you think about it, the EU has effectively said the things that you really need to operate through daily life in a way that means that you have the same choice exclusive normal consumers, sorry, not normal consumers, but most consumers, is what we want to be covering in this legislation. And it means that there are going to be obligations for manufacturers, for service providers, but also for people importing goods into Ireland. If you are putting them on the market, it's your responsibility to make sure that they're accessible, even if you didn't manufacture them. I think that's really important because we do, we do rely heavily on imported goods here. And so we have a right to assume that those are going to be safe not just safe, but accessible to the majority of our population. It's not a completely all-compassing piece of legislation. So there are a few exemptions. If you are a micro business, so if you have fewer than 10 employees and a turnover or a balance sheet of less than 2 million euro per year, then you won't have to comply with the requirements for services, and you will receive some kind of leeway from the requirements for goods. And there are a few other kind of exemptions from kind of aspects of the legislation. But fundamentally, it is quite a big shift for a lot of organisations, not just to say that they are complying with the legislation and that they're doing things to be accessible, because actually lots of businesses have been working hard on this already. Mm. But there is a kind of an expectation that there'll be a lot more paperwork involved. As is often the case with compliance with EU legislation or EU-derived legislation, there is work to do in record keeping. You're going to have to make sure that where you have goods that require conformity assessments and other checks, that you actually go through the stages of making sure that that's been done, you've got the paperwork, and that if the regulator asks to see it, that you can demonstrate.
Are there going to be fines or penalties or naming and shaming of businesses that aren't fully compliant?
So, yes, the expectation is that there'll be a relatively broad range of penalties on offer. So the regulator for most of the kind of goods and services that are in scope within Ireland is going to be the CCPA, the Competition and Consumer Protection Authority, and they will be effectively inviting consumers to provide their complaints and let them know if they're not happy with the accessibility levels of a particular service or product. And you can do that via their website. In advance of the legislation coming into force on Friday, they populated their website with lots more information and guidance, both for businesses but also for consumers to make complaints as necessary. So they will be interested in receiving complaints. They also have the right to proactively investigate businesses if they wish to. I'm not sure if they necessarily have the resource to do a lot of that yet. I suspect most of their work will be reactive following consumer complaints, but they will have the ability to really prevent businesses from putting goods on the market. There are potential fines available. In Ireland, unusually, we also have criminal penalties, which makes us stand out across the EU. I don't expect that many of those will be enforced. But technically, if you are putting a CE mark on a product, you now have to confirm that that product is accessible if it falls within the scope of the law, as well as meeting all the safety requirements to CE marking. And if you do that, and it's not, then you may well be subject to prosecution. So there are a whole range of penalties available. I don't expect us to see enormous fines of the sort that we saw under the GDPR. And in fact, the levels of fines available in Ireland will be much lower than that. But there is absolutely a risk of further action. And I suspect the naming and shaming element will probably be the most significant in this case. If you are particularly if you are claiming to be offering an accessible service, or you're offering a service which could quite easily be made accessible, or indeed a product which could quite easily be made accessible, and you're failing to do that because you haven't thought about your packaging, or you haven't thought about the contrast of your website, or you're doing things that make it difficult for people to navigate to where they need, then I suspect that will be quite embarrassing for some organisations.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that you mentioned the GDPR there, and since that has come into play, there's been a lot of talk about, privacy by design and security by design, and which is fantastic. And I know from reading up on the EAA they promote design for all. That seems to be a similar practice that, you know, if you are a business starting out or if you're bringing a new product to market or whatever it may be, that you have that design for all concept ingrained in the DNA from the outset.
Completely. It's really important to be thinking about, you know, the very earliest stages of inception for a service or a product. You know, is this inherently inaccessible? If so, why? If it's not, if it can be made accessible, then what can you do to maximize that? And much like with privacy, we absolutely find that with accessibility, the earlier you think about these things, and if you embed it from the beginning, it's much easier and much cheaper as well to be compliant. It's really hard to reverse engineer accessibility into products that have not been designed that way. Sometimes it's a matter of straightforward changes on a website, but when you're talking about physical products and the way that they've been built and designed, that is much harder. So you really do need to think about it from the beginning. It's not necessarily easy, because the nature of adaptive technology and the ways in which you know, tech can be made more accessible change over time. So something that would be within a designer's imagination in 10 years' time might not exist now. So it's not going to be a static thing. There will be, you know, it's not the case that as of now we've decided what is and isn't accessible. It's going to grow and change over time, and standards will shift and change. So it's something that businesses are always going to have to be aware of.
Mm. And you mentioned there that some businesses have been working on this for quite some time, but for those who haven't, or perhaps a business that is potentially on the smaller side or could potentially be exempt but wants to get involved and wants to ensure that their products and services are more accessible, is there a centralized resource hub that people can go and get information and get guidance and so on?
I would say one of the challenges of kind of looking at and advising on the EAA is that there has been far less guidance and support available than would be the case with other bits of legislation. I think it's gone a bit under the radar. It's great people are talking about it so much now, but I've been sort of sadly in a lonely fashion writing articles about this for some years. And for a long time, it was really hard to find anyone else talking about it. That's thankfully not the case anymore, but I think a lot of businesses could be forgiven for sort of not really having felt understood that this was something that would apply to them. As a result, I think there's a lack of really good centralized information, although I will say as of the last few days, the CCPA has put a lot more information for businesses up on it on its website. There's not an awful lot at EU level, and if you happen to be selling products or services into other EU markets, there may be more support available. So there's quite a lot available in Germany and in the Netherlands as well, and because this is a directive and not a regulation, you can't be totally certain, I'm afraid, that the work that you're doing in Ireland will be necessarily sufficient or the same as would be required by other EU countries. So if you have a big market somewhere else, even if you're a relatively small entrant, I would definitely say have a look at what's going on there and take some advice in relation to that. But there is an awful lot that businesses can do just right now. There are some standards that have existed for a long time, the Web Accessibility Standards, or WCAG standards, which you know, are sort of the benchmark really for most websites and apps. They get you about 95% of the way there. And when it comes to product design, there is perhaps a slightly, you know, trickier, you know, thing to do, and in that case it's really a matter of making sure that you are speaking to accessibility experts, and that your team and your designers have been trained to think about these issues from the beginning. I think it would be great if there was more resource available at EU level and there was a bit more harmony on this. At the moment, I think you will be forgiven for not having things done perfectly, but making the effort. And so having a look at your site, doing a bit of an audit if you're your website operator, looking at your products if you're manufacturing or importing goods, and actually speaking to everyone else that's involved in kind of the kind of delivery and supply chain of all of that, to make sure that everyone is pulling in the same direction is really important. There will definitely be more guidance and more support available over the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not the case that, you know, if you can't find what you're looking for now, sort of throw up your hands and despair and give up. But I do think that it's going to become an increasingly important area because people will expect it and have a right to. So I think so, if there isn't information or guidance available, pester the regulator, pester the CCPA, and say, "What do I do in this situation? What's expected?" Because they have the ability to produce guidance. They've done so for micro businesses already, and so they can absolutely do so in other areas if it's needed.
Brilliant stuff. Well, get started, do an audit, and ask for help if you need it. That is some good advice. Jo Joyce, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jess.
Yeah, that was Jo Joyce, Head of Regulatory IP and Digital at Taylor Wessing Ireland. I would love to hear your experiences. Have you encountered, like that email I referenced, unaccessible or inaccessible websites or services or products? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back after the break, we have something a little bit different.
I, the AI clone of Jess, will take you on a tour of AI audio and explain why you should be cautious about what you hear.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk on News Talk, where we explore the wonders and worries of the digital age. I'm your AI cloned host, built by code, voiced by algorithm, yet designed to sound just like one of you. Today, we're zooming in on a tech evolution that's both fascinating and a little eerie: synthetic voices. You've heard them in your audiobooks, your smart devices, even your customer service calls. And now, well, here I am. Can you trust a synthetic voice? In a 2025 study, only 46% of people worldwide say they trust AI systems. Yet, paradoxically, two-thirds of us use AI regularly, and many don't even realise when they're talking to a bot. Turns out, the less people know a voice is artificial, the more likely they are to trust it. Globally, there are now over 8 billion AI voice assistants. That's more voices than people. Businesses are betting big. 67% say voice AI is central to their strategy, and a whopping 84% plan to boost spending this year. But here's the kicker: only one in five companies are truly satisfied with their voice agents. As our voices get cloned, crafted, and coded, ethical questions start to echo louder. Should AI voices identify themselves? Can we spot a deepfake? 70% of people think laws should regulate synthetic speech, but legislation's still catching up. So, what makes a voice trustworthy? The warmth in a syllable, the stumble in a sentence? Or is it just consistency and good design? Whether from lungs or logic boards, voices move us. And that raises a new question: if trust can be manufactured, is authenticity obsolete? But here's the thing, radio isn't just about information, it's about connection. For over a century, radio has been the voice in the kitchen, the companion on the commute, the friend in the quiet hours. It's a uniquely intimate medium, one where tone, breath, and silence carry as much meaning as words. Unlike streaming platforms or social feeds, radio is live. It's human. It's unpredictable in the best way. A laugh that wasn't planned, a pause that says more than a paragraph, a presenter who stumbles, then recovers, and in doing so, reminds us we're all gloriously imperfect. Studies show that listeners form parasocial bonds with radio hosts, one-sided relationships that feel deeply personal. That's not just psychology, it's trust, and trust is fragile. When AI voices enter the mix, especially without disclosure, we risk eroding that bond. Radio thrives on authenticity. It's not just about what's said, it's who says it and how. When we replace that with a synthetic voice, even a convincing one, we risk losing the very thing that makes radio powerful: its humanity. So should we be wary? Yes, but not afraid. AI can enhance radio, but it shouldn't impersonate. As always, we want to hear your views. Are you allergic to this AI voice? Could you listen to it for an hour? Would you even know that it's not the actual Jess Kelly? Email techtalk@newstalk.com.
The reality, regardless of whether we like it or not, is that we will start seeing and hearing more AI-generated content like this as time goes by. We need to be eyes wide open, question what is around us, and report content that is doing harm. While this is an experiment to showcase the capabilities, there's no denying that AI poses a threat to many creative industries. It can produce content in a matter of minutes, understand context, creative direction, and feedback. It doesn't need annual leave or sick pay. The question we need to ask and the debate that needs to be had is, just because technology can do something, should it? I leave you with that thought, but please do share your thoughts. TechTalk@newstalk.com. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on the Go Loud app. That's it for now. I'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.